The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The last year of the Trump administration, and to tell the story about things we prevented, really bad things, dangerous things, that could have taken the country in a dark direction.
What kind of terrible things did you prevent?
At various times, during the last year of the administration, you have folks in the White House are proposing to take military action against Venezuela, to strike Iran. At one point, somebody proposed we blockade Cuba. These ideas would happen, it seemed, every few weeks, something like this would come up, and we'd have to swat them down.
Who's we had to swat them down?
Well, mostly me. I had good support from General Mark Milley.
Mostly me, says the mid-level bureaucrat that was appointed the defense secretary in, 2019? He was in there for all of a year, maybe a year and a half. And there he is on national TV last night admitting to treason. Yeah, I was there. I was there as a career bureaucrat to prevent the commander-in-chief from carrying out his responsibilities as a duly elected president. This is astounding. Yet another one. He mentions Mark Milley there at the end. You know, woke Milley. The one that was calling China to make sure that, you know, they knew China. China needed to know that Donald Trump wasn't going to nuke them. Thanks to General Milley for going around the commander-in-chief, you see? And then he's in agreement, perfect agreement with Nancy Pelosi, leading up to the inauguration of the fake president. Ah, Pelosi was worried. So she was talking to Milley saying that he is crazy, Donald Trump. We've got to make sure there's control over the nuclear codes. And Milley's response, I agree, Speaker Pelosi. This was a coup, and now it's so obvious it's in plain sight. It's there for everyone to see. They openly admit it. They can't help themselves. We were there to prevent Donald Trump from taking action. By we, who do you mean? Well, mostly me, says the mid-level bureaucrat. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. But to get to the live video stream, we offer that exclusively at our very own website. You can see it there at the bottom of the page. That would be thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. It takes you to the live stream page. We come to you live every weekday morning here in the central time zone of the United States at 11 a.m. So make the adjustment and join us if you can for the live broadcast. If not, that same page mentioned there at the bottom of the screen will also take you to the podcast that we post two or three hours after the fact, generally speaking. So we're glad that you can listen, whether it's with the live show or to view on demand after the fact. So there is the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper. He's on 60 Minutes last night, and yet another one of Trump's people. That's what's crazy about this, too. He was working for Donald Trump, and yet no respect, no loyalty. He was a weak leader, as Donald Trump said in a statement he released last night. He wouldn't take action. He didn't take action during the Summer of Love in 2020. He doesn't take action to actually help protect American people or their businesses during the ongoing riots that just went on for months and months and months. But boy, will he ever take action to stop the bad orange man. I mean, that's the number one objective for all of these treasonous traitors. You just got to stop Donald Trump. This was from Vox, by the way. I'll get to Trump's statement here in just a second. Here he is saying, oh, he wanted to send missiles to Venezuela or Iran, maybe even the drug cartels. This is from Vox. They want to revise the history is what they want to do. And it's recent history. September 2019. So 2.5, 3 years ago. It says here, John Bolton, remember him? John Bolton, Vox, by the way, this is no conservative publication. Vox writes, John Bolton left the Trump administration because Trump wouldn't let him start a war. That's what's crazy about this revisionist history, is that there were no wars during the Trump years. No wars. Vox says, John Bolton's ouster as President Donald Trump's national security advisor reveals something important. Even the deepest Washington insider and pro-war advocate can fail to push this commander-in-chief to start a major conflict. That's Vox basically saying that even this hawkish John Bolton, even his influence, cannot push Trump to go to war. So says Vox in September of 2019. They went on to say, when Bolton joined the administration in April 2018, the worry was that the arch-nationalist hawk would convince the war-averse Trump. The war-averse Trump. And then there's Esper last night saying, yeah, we had to stop him. And he takes credit, Esper, the mid-level bureaucrat, that because some rhino Republicans wanted to appoint him to the Secretary of Defense, Trump went ahead and did it, and then found out very quickly in that he was weak. That he was weak and pathetic, really. And you see it last night even in the interview with his shifty eyes and so on. He's confessing. He's confessing to being a traitor. Guilty of treason. Is America under attack? It certainly is. You know this if you're a regular viewer. The war-averse Trump, says Vox. Here was a guy who for decades called for bombing North Korea and Iran, exercising unilateral American power around the world, and cutting tethers to international institutions. That's John Bolton. And Donald Trump finally had enough of him and said, look, it's not like we're agreeing with everything Donald Trump did or said, or John Bolton, he's had a pretty established career in the world of foreign policy, has worked for a number of administrations. But just to go to what Esper said last night, it's not true. None of it's true. And okay, there's banter in the White House about, well, maybe we should. Venezuela, after all. Iran, or blockading Cuba, the communist state. What kind of banter goes on in the Biden administration? You got a lot of people in the White House right now that they want a hot war with Russia. Nuclear-armed Russia. Politico, around the same time, September 2019, it says, Bolton also said more than once that Trump's failure to respond to the Iranian attack on an American drone earlier this summer set the stage for the Islamic Republic's aggression in recent months. So there was this drone attack, and Trump didn't respond in 2019. And John Bolton, I mean, he went ballistic over this. This non-response. You've got to respond, otherwise you're just empowering this the mullahs. And now comes Mark Esper, happily revising the history, claiming that he saved America from Donald Trump. Here's some truth from Trump himself. Mark Esper was weak and totally ineffective, and because of it, I had to run the military. I took out ISIS, Qassem Soleimani, al-Baghdadi, rebuilt the military with $2.5 trillion, created Space Force, and so much more. Mark Esper was a stiff who was desperate not to lose his job. He would do anything I wanted. That's why I called him Yesper. Yes, Esper Yesper. Says here, he was a lightweight and figurehead, and I realized it very early on. He was recommended to me by some very weak rhinos. And that's what he turned out to be. That's what he is. He's another weak rhino who's trying to score some points by coming out and criticizing Donald Trump. How easy is that? How easy it is to just go right, look at Bill Barr, case in point, to just go right along, win a little bit of praise from Nora O'Donnell on CBS. Here's a bit more from his interview last night, clip two.
In order to deal with what he calls some of the crazy ideas coming from the White House, Esper and Milley came up with a system.
I come up with this idea. Actually, Mark Milley and I discuss it, what we call the four no's. The four things we had to prevent from happening between then and the election. And one was no strategic retreats, no unnecessary wars, no politicization of the military, and no misuse of the military. And so as we went through the next 5 to 6 months, that became the metric by which we would measure things.
On whose authority did you come up with this system? The four no's? No retreats? What does he say? No unnecessary wars? No politicization of the military? And he worked this up with Mark Milley? Really? No use of the military. What? Well, Biden's people, they're sure using it now. And look at the retreat from last August. Mark Milley headed that up, by the way. Remember that? That disastrous, humiliating retreat that saw 13 American Marines blow up on a suicide attack. And then Milley lying about all of the reasons leading up to that attack and after. And then handing over one of the strongest, most powerful militaries in the world to the Taliban. There you go. But be assured, this man that was Secretary of Defense for what, a little over a year? He saved America. So he said, who was mostly responsible for preventing the bad orange man from taking action? Well, mostly me. But, you know, I was right there with Mark Milley, too. He was a big help. This is, I mean, you really can't make this kind of thing up. And then that the media would see this as just another story for 60 Minutes. What is he? I didn't even have time to check. Does he have a book? Did he just come out with a book, Mark Esper, like Bill Barr and all the rest? He probably did. And so now he's got to go out and try to make a little bit of money by criticizing Donald Trump. You know, there was a tweet last week, by the way. Who was it? Liz Cheney? And it was some other rhino that came out with a book. I think Liz Cheney sold 244 books in her first week of sales. 244 in a nation of 330 million people. The message isn't resonating with a majority of Americans. And they know. The Americans know. You keep hearing, I know it's on a local level. You heard last week, we reported on it on this show, the primaries, Donald Trump being 23 for 23, and then in Texas a few weeks before that, he was 32 for 32. All the candidates he supports, there was the school board election somewhere in Texas. Every single seat went to a Republican. People at the grass level, they know. They know that America has been taken over. So many of the strongest positions have been taken over by communists. And so where elections are still, you know, valid and not stolen, the Republicans, the conservatives are winning. And yet the reporting, it just continues on. They continue discussing abortion or whatever the subject might be, Esper's time underneath Trump, as if they're just talking to 95% in the country that fully agree with them, when it's practically the opposite. In the same interview, just listen to this. Here's the guy who says that, yeah, we prevented, well, Venezuela. He even thought about firing some shots at the drug cartels in Mexico. You know, the ones sending in all of those slaves and fentanyl and these thugs, these rapists, these criminals. Donald Trump, by the way, he came in his statement last night. He answered all of the big points that CBS came out, the big reveals. And then he gets to the end and he talks about firing missiles at drug cartels and says, you know, well, I've got no comment on that. So he did consider it. And you know what? Had he done that, how much support do you suppose he would have had from Americans in Texas and New Mexico and Arizona to actually fight back against the cartels? This was Mark Esper in the same. Keep in mind, this is the same interview. This is last night on 60 Minutes, clip six.
Overall, how would you grade President Biden and his administration's performance in terms of Ukraine?
It's mixed. It had a shaky start. I would have never taken the military option off the table, for example. I don't understand the reluctance to provide the Ukrainians with MiGs.
Fighter jets.
Fighter jets, that's right.
Yeah, we should. Why take the military off the table? And give them the American-made planes. Give them whatever they need. Let's join the fight. And then you had those reports last week, the Biden people bragging, basically. Yeah, we helped the Ukrainians shoot. We helped the Ukrainians sink that Russian destroyer ship. And then the transport plane carrying all those Russians into Ukraine. We shot it down. So they're bragging about this. And then you've got Esper for his part saying, I guess if there's one thing, I think Biden could be a little more militaristic when it comes to Ukraine and fighting against nuclear-armed Russia. And he's concerned about what someone in the White House said about how to handle Venezuela or Iran? It's in the very same interview. Trump said regarding the sending in 10,000, they made the claim last night, CBS did, that Trump wanted 10,000 active duty troops in D.C. after the St. John's Church was set on fire. Remember that in the summer of love? The summer of 2020 when D.C. and other cities around the U.S. were going up in flames? And Donald Trump could hardly get any support from mayors or local law enforcement. And when they did show any kind of force to just push back the mob, Nora O'Donnell and others like her went ballistic. You can't send in law enforcement to push back these rioters. Well, with respect to calling in for the National Guard, Donald Trump says that's wrong. He didn't call them in following the fire at St. John's. He says, I wanted to send at least 10,000 troops for the January 6 protest because I knew many people were coming to D.C. that day to protest the corrupt presidential election of 2020. It says Nancy Pelosi and the D.C. mayor turned me down. 60 Minutes should ask them why they chose to not have proper security, which would have totally changed that day and allowed us to have a proper debate on the evidence of massive election fraud, which the fake news media still refuses to cover whatsoever. See, they didn't want security. They didn't want any troops in there ahead of the January 6th protest because they wanted that to turn into an insurrection hoax. It's a hoax. But they wanted that to be an insurrection to show how dangerous Donald Trump and his supporters are. Then they bring in the National Guard after January 6th. They surround D.C. all the way up through the inauguration because that's all part of the theater. The protest that the Trump supporters tried to overthrow the Capitol. Then you bring in the National Guard. Then you have D.C. as an armed camp for the fake inauguration of Joe Biden. And it's all perfect. And then Nora O'Donnell and all the others in the media, they'll run with this story. Here's Donald Trump trying to set the record straight. And in some cases, we're talking about setting it straight after, what, 18, 24 months? Pelosi, in the lead up to that fake inauguration, remember, she was in cahoots. The New York Times revealed this. And again, they report all this with a straight face. They're actually cheerleading it. You mean Pelosi called Milley and said Donald Trump is crazy? You've got to take away any control that he has of the nuclear codes? And Milley nods in agreement. This is CNN reporting on it at the time. We played this for you back in September of 2021, just last year, clip seven.
Same day, January 8th, Milley gets a call from Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. We've heard about this call, but Woodward and Costa got an exclusive transcript of the call. Pelosi has the same concerns that Milley does. The phone call is dramatic. It is blunt. And Pelosi wants Milley to reassure her that the nuclear weapons are safe. And this is the exchange. Pelosi, who knows what he might do? He's crazy. You know he's crazy. He's been crazy for a long time. So don't say you don't know what his state of mind is. He He's crazy. And what he did yesterday, meaning actually 2 days ago, January 6th, is further evidence of his craziness. General Milley says, Madam Speaker, I agree with you on everything. Milley reassures Pelosi on the call, but when he gets off, he thinks to himself, she's right. And he decides to take this extraordinary action.
So he has this call with the speaker in right. which she is agitated and essentially reinforces his concerns.
Correct.
He's seeing this intelligence and actually having a back channel. That's extraordinary. Back channel with his counterpart in China saying, calm down. Everything will be okay. And he decides to call this extraordinary meeting. Take us inside.
Right. And by the way, according to Woodward and Costa, Milley never tells the president about these back channel calls.
Of course he doesn't. He doesn't tell the president about any of these back channel calls. He was working for Donald Trump at the time, keep in mind. These people are guilty of treason. And in their own words, they'll happily admit it on national TV. At that same time, September of just last year, there was a New York Times article. Fears that Trump might launch a strike prompted General Milley to reassure China. That's according to a book, I think, by Bob Woodward and some other guy. So Milley had to call his Chinese counterpart and reassure him. When during the Trump presidency was there ever a time when the United States was about to go to war with China? Seriously. This is totally fake history, recent history, fake news at the time. And Milley going around the president of the United States. Says here, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs twice called his Chinese counterpart in the final months of the Trump administration to reassure him that Donald J. Trump had no plans to attack China in an effort to remain in power and that the United States was not collapsing. Well, thank you. So here's Milley saving America, so he thinks. And these are the same people saying, hey, we need to dial it up with Russia. And even if Russia threatens nuclear war, that's fine. We're okay with this because we got to fight for democracy in Ukraine. It says here, things may look unsteady, the chairman, General Mark Milley, told his Chinese counterpart. But that's the nature of democracy. General Lee, we are 100% steady. Everything's fine, but democracy can be sloppy sometimes. This New York Times article at the time, this is back in September, it says, yet despite his assurances, General Milley was so concerned about Mr. Trump that later that day, he convened a meeting with top commanders to remind them that the procedures for launching a nuclear weapon called for his involvement in such a decision. Listen, fellas. As if Donald Trump would ever make such a call, by the way, but let that go. But here is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs assembling his staff saying, look, anything that comes down to the nuclear codes, that's going to be made by me. That's the decision I make, not the commander-in-chief. So where is the insurrection here? Where is the real coup? These are good questions. This was Barack Obama's wingman over the weekend, Eric Holder. Listen to what he had to say about, again, how easy it is. But the thing is, he's from the radical left. What's unbelievable are these people that were actually working for Donald Trump. But they all agree. They all think the same way. The affliction is bitter. There is no helper in Israel. This was Eric Holder over the weekend, clip 3.
At some point, people at the Justice Department, perhaps that prosecutor in Atlanta, are going to have to make a determination about whether or not they want to indict Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. My initial thought was not to indict the former president out of concern of how divisive it would be. Mm-hmm. But given what we have learned, I think that he probably has to be held accountable.
So he's changing his views to even be more extreme. Got to go after Trump. Listen, just in looking at the last 6 years, and everything that they have done, as Trump has pointed out in one rally after another, everything that they have tried to do to destroy him. And keep in mind, he's 55 for 55. He's got solid support from ordinary Americans. But the way they tried to destroy him before he ever even became the Republican nominee, the way they tried to destroy him through the campaign against Hillary Clinton, the way they tried to destroy him when he was president of the United States, and they continue. You think these people like Eric Holder are just going to sort of take it sitting down that Donald Trump has a resurgence again as we come into the midterms for this November? They're doing, you heard it from his own mouth. We've got to do everything that we can to destroy him. Now, they don't want to see him ever, ever in another election. This movie, by the way, 2,000 Mules. This was from, I forget, some tracking service that keeps track of the weekend box office figures. It says the online version of the movie, it launched Saturday night, grossed more than $1 million in less than 12 hours on the video streaming platform Rumble and its subscription-based platform Locals. It says the movie's gross sales on Rumble and Locals, which began on Saturday at noon, are good enough to put 2,000 Mules in the estimated box office top 10 for the weekend of May 6 to May 8. And yet you'd never know it, because there's been a near total blackout in the communist media and even in conservative media. Just a few conservative sites are even reporting on this. And yet it's a top 10 movie in the United States from over the weekend. Listen to, this is Steve Hilton, he's on Fox News. This is last night. Listen to the comments he has toward the end of his opening monologue. This is clip 13.
Biden wants rule by the mob, not the rule of law. This is not the behavior of a man who's fit to be the leader of the free world. He promised to be a unifying healer and ended up an authoritarian demagogue. As we said at the time, he should have been impeached over Afghanistan. Now, as he brazenly incites mobs to disrupt the proceedings of the Supreme Court for partisan ends, yes, Biden should be impeached for that. And yes, he deserves the shame that will forever attach to his name.
Okay, so strong words. He's not fit to rule. But did you know that Biden also stole the election with the help of Barack Obama? Did you know this? Did you know that that stolen election has consequences, and that everything you're describing, it all traces back to November 3rd, 2020? If he's not fit to rule, if he supports the rule of the mob, and so does Esper. I mean, he didn't do anything to stop the summer of rioting in 2020. They all support the rule of the mob. In that way, they're right in step with the radical left. They've surrendered in their mindset. Already they've surrendered. Listen to this roundtable. This is at CNN over the weekend about, you know, about all of the protests surrounding the Supreme Court justices, Kavanaugh and Roberts in particular. And then Sam Alito, he has to go into hiding because he's got to stay away from the mob. A sitting Supreme Court justice, he has to hide out with his wife somewhere because of threats of violence over the possibility that Roe v. Wade could be overturned. Here's how CNN justifies violent protesting. Clip 8.
But there are real questions and conversation today about protests outside Supreme Court justices' houses, particularly Justice Kavanaugh. Where do you think that line is?
I think for a lot of people, a conversation about civility feels like it misses the mark when constitutional rights that you believe that you had for over 50 years are about to be overturned.
Yeah, we can't talk about civility at times like this. It's the same thinking as summer of 2020. Look, we've talked long enough. Now we've got to take to the streets. And if Sam Alito has to go into hiding, fine. Fine. So who will stand up to the mob? Not Mark Esper. He won't stand up to the mob. Steve Hilton has a scathing rebuke of the fake president at the end of his opening monologue last night. How about devoting 2 minutes later on in the show to 2,000 Mules? How strange it was, as I said last week, for Tucker Carlson to devote 7-8 minutes to the founder of True the Vote, and then he doesn't even mention 2,000 Mules. He talks about everything that's in 2,000 Mules and then fails to mention that, by the way, there's a 90-minute documentary out there that goes into detail on everything we're discussing right here with Miss Engelbrecht. He can't do it. He can't do it. The Fox, the higher-ups at Fox, they won't let it happen. So Tucker doesn't talk about it. Hilton doesn't bring it up. Hannity's not going to bring it up. Jesse Waters, nope. And Laura Ingraham, she went to school with Dinesh D'Souza. She went to college with Dinesh D'Souza, and she can't even find the time. Keep in mind, by the way, that Dinesh D'Souza's been all over Fox News in the past. But on this point, we cannot go there. We have to have a network-wide blackout. And that's what's happening. Now, they can come out and say Biden's not fit. Biden's incompetent. Biden has dementia. Biden is causing a crisis in inflation. He's causing a crisis in crime. He's causing a crisis in fuel and energy costs, all these things. Shortages, supply chain crisis, the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. We can cover all of those disasters, but we can't cover the fact that he's illegitimate to begin with. Isn't that amazing? The one thing that connects all of these disastrous events together is the one thing that's universally blocked out. And yet even still, publicity surrounding the movie, as I said on Friday's show, is gaining traction, as well it should. And yet even still, as Sam and I were emailing this morning, it's frustrating to think about how much more could have been revealed in that movie, for example. The addresses, for example, of all of these ballot harvesting houses that the mules were getting the fake ballots from and the organizations behind them all. This was from Red State. It says here the film's findings are based on a review of more than 4 million minutes of ballot drop box surveillance, film obtained via public records. It says, True the Vote, a nonprofit organization focused on election integrity issues, obtained the data and retained an investigator, Greg Phillips, to oversee the analysis, likely knowing that the fact checkers were going to be out in force immediately to attack the credibility of the film and the data presented therein. Engelbrecht set up a plan to have investigator Phillips perform a massive data dump. They've codenamed Ripcord, so all of the information True the Vote has will be publicly accessible, including, let's hope, there were some tweets suggesting this over the weekend, but including these organizations that were coordinating the steal at these local levels. But you wonder, why not come out with that full force from the beginning? And then, as I said last week, where is law enforcement to back it up and to say, yeah, we caught him. We see the cell phone pings. We see the video footage. We're gonna interrogate some people, and people are going to jail. Not a peep from law enforcement. Nothing from the DOJ. Nothing from the Department of Homeland Security. Nothing. It's just all this privately funded effort and the help of a pretty good filmmaker, Dinesh D'Souza. But that's about it. That's about it. The affliction is certainly bitter. only God could intervene and make this right. I mean, how bad is it when the previous Secretary of Defense, working under Donald Trump, gets up on national television and says, Yeah, I basically got away with treason. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty? Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
On Friday's show, we referred you to Isaiah 55, where God says, look, seek after me while I might be found. And then in verses 8 and 9, it talks about how God's thoughts are not our thoughts. We really do have to fill up on the thoughts of God, on the thinking of God, on the words of God, God's truth. Thy word is truth, Jesus said in John 17 and verse 17. He said in that same gospel that the truth is what sets us free. God's truth. Last week, we talked about having the proper hunger and thirst for God's truth and God's righteousness. That's in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 and verse 6. And as I was telling the students last week, I mean, we wake up each morning, certainly, with hunger pangs physically, unless we're not feeling well or something like that. But it doesn't take very long. It doesn't take that many hours to go without physical food and sustenance and before you're hungry again. And that's what, there's passages in the Bible that talk about God's servants, David, you know, going before God three times a day in prayers, a steady diet of spiritual food. You can read John 6 sometime about how Jesus there saying that, look, we need to gather up every fragment here so that we can consume all of this food. And of course, the meaning, as he explains in that chapter, I mean, he's talking much more about spiritual food, dining on that spiritual food, doing our part every day. Notice 2 Timothy chapter 1 in verse 6, this is Paul admonishing Timothy, whose faith was shaken. The people of God were being persecuted. The apostle Paul was awaiting his execution. And Paul said to Timothy, wherefore I put you in remembrance that you stir up the gift of God, which is in you by the putting on of my hands. You've got to stir up that gift, that precious gift of the Holy Spirit. There's things that you have to do to be led by the Spirit of God, as I read Friday. Romans 8, verses 14 to 16, as many as are led by the Spirit, they are the children of God. Paul said to Timothy, now stir it up, it says in verse 7, for God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. That's the idea here. We're here as true Christians, as God's servants, to think like God, to let in the mind of Christ, Philippians 2:5. To let in this spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. How do you do it? Well, daily, every day, we've got to renew that spirit in us. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 16. It says, for which cause we faint not, but though the outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. As you push your way through middle age and come to the later years of your life, you see every day you're reminded of how that outward man is perishing. It's slowing down. It's getting older. It doesn't quite have the energy and the strength that it used to have. Now, there's obviously things that we need to do to try to keep that strength for as long as is possible. And some are better than others at doing that. There's certainly a lot that's a separate study, I suppose, you could get into, but God does emphasize the importance of physical exercise and good health, all those things, in the Bible as well. But above all, God wants us to be spiritually healthy, spiritually strong and fit. And so every day we renew that inward man. That's the same as Paul basically telling Timothy, now stir it up. Make sure you're getting in your daily Bible study. Make sure you're really fervently praying to God. And make sure that you're living according to God's laws. That's the main thing. Being a doer of God's word, of God's truth. Notice this psalm. This is Psalm 19. I've gone through this psalm before with various lectures. But there's a beauty here. Even when you look at God's creation, we often read this together with Romans 1, verse 20, how that the material creation certainly does reveal a lot about God. Here in Psalm 1, or 19, and verse 1, it says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. You can look around, like Romans 1 and verse 20 says, you can look at the heavens, you can look at God's creation, and you can see God. You can see God. If your attitude is right, if you're humble before the presence of God, if you're contrite, and if you fear God, as it says in Isaiah, then you can know. There's a definite message coming from the heavens. We've talked a lot over the years about the Hubble Space Telescope. Joel Hilliker's written about and discussed the James Webb Telescope, which he was telling us yesterday at our Mother's Day gathering, that they're getting some good returns. They're getting some spectacular imagery. They're getting some spectacular footage. We'll have to have him on this show to discuss that further, or at least to maybe get some clips of some things that he covers in the weeks ahead. But verse 2 here in the Revised Standard, this is Psalm 19, it says, day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There's a message every day. God declares. His message is being declared by the heavens. Verse 3 says, there's no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. See, it's an unspoken message, but it comes through loud and clear. If your eyes are open to God's creation, if you have eyes to see, spiritually speaking, you're hearing this message. You know that the heavens declare God's glory. And you know, like Mr. Armstrong explains, Herbert Armstrong in the booklet, Does God Exist? You can call our operators to get a copy of that if you'd like, 1-866-930-3024. But he explains in there that the universe is like this great master clock, and it keeps perfect time, and everything works and functions according to definite laws. There is a sustainer. Now, you can look out into the universe and see all the waste and decay that has resulted from Satan's rebellion from millions of years ago. There is a lot that God's family will have to do to beautify the universe. But what is it that just keeps, you know, planets from spinning out of orbit? What is it that makes it possible for human life to even exist on this planet? Well, there are definite laws that God set in motion. And you can view the heavens, or you can look at life on this earth as it relates to the other planets in the solar system, and our just how we relate to the sun, which dominates our solar system. And you can see harmony. You can see order. God is the author of orderliness and peace. He's not the author of chaos and confusion. Verse 4, it says, their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. It says, in them, speaking of the heavens, has he, God, set the tabernacle, or a tabernacle, for the sun. a tabernacle for the sun. It all revolves around the sun. The sun literally dominates our solar system in every respect. The sun makes up more than 99% of all the matter in our solar system. That's astounding. We're just like a little, just this planet we're on, when you compare it to the universe, it's just like a little pinprick. And then we, little human beings, we're like a pinprick, not even that, a pinprick on a pinprick. And yet we like to think of ourselves as scholarly and experts for sure. Tony Fauci, he's getting his honorary degree over the weekend. I mean, he's revered almost like a God being. He's just a little speck. Then he's gotten it totally wrong. But it's no problem for people to ignore certain things like where the virus came from or how that Fauci helped to create it. Or they can just go back and revise the history, even if it's from just a year ago, as I covered in the first segment. But here is this sun, 15 million degrees. This is from a book about the sun, Professor Lucy Green. She says, not only does sunlight allow us to see, but it makes our rocky planet habitable for millions of species of animals and plants. It grows our food, it drives our weather, and it can even be utilized to generate electricity to power modern society. It says sunlight is amazingly versatile. But above all, there is something about sunlight that means it is able to keep us alive. We literally could not live without it. Now, you could get into a separate study on some of the spiritual parallels with just that. Jesus Christ, the Son of Righteousness, as he's referred to as over in Malachi 4. It's spiritual light above all that God wants to fill us up on. It's sort of like the physical food, spiritual food parallel. It's the same here with sunlight. Jesus in John 3 says, I'm a light that came into this world, but men love darkness. If you go back to the very beginning of the recreation in Genesis 1, one of the first things God had to do was to just peel away this covering that kept the earth dark. That's the first thing that has to happen for a convert, a true Christian. Our minds need to be opened to the truth. John 6 and verse 44. And then God will fill us with light. But now we've got to be hungry for it. We've got to stir up that spirit. Verse 5, it says, which is a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoices as a strong man to run a race, a strong man. Here again, speaking of the sun and how this tabernacle of our solar system surrounds it and so on. The book, 15 Million Degrees, it says, while the aim of a thermonuclear bomb is to release a vast amount of energy in a very short amount of time, the sun releases its energy relatively slowly and constantly. What allows the sun to produce the energy it does is its size. The sun's core, where the conditions make nuclear fusion possible, occupies the inner 25% of the sun, and so on. And basically what this lady is describing here is this delicate balancing act. It's all perfect, perfectly designed. Joel Hilliker in the Universe booklet that we produce here, again, you can call our operators to get a free copy of that. But he writes in there about the Goldilocks planet. Some have referred to Earth as the Goldilocks planet because you just nudge it a little bit this way or that way, and there's no way that the Earth could sustain human life, any life. Why is it so different here when compared to Mars or Jupiter or any of the other planets? Millions, trillions of them in the universe. And the James Webb telescope will show this. Why so different on Earth? Well, that again gets to some other subjects that we would love to delve into more in coming programs. But verse 6 here says, his going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. Nothing is hid from the sun's heat, from its energy, from all these life-giving elements. Now, God wants to give us spiritual life. God wants to fill our lives with spiritual light. Notice verse 7, and some commentaries have said, well, there's a kind of a change in subject here. There's not. It's not a change in subject. It's not a new subject that the psalmist is writing of. Verse 7 says, the law of the eternal is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the eternal is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. It says, the fear of the eternal is clean, enduring forever. It says, the judgments of the eternal are true and righteous altogether. See, all of that harmony and perfection and orderliness and structure that you see in God's material creation, this is what He wants for our lives. This is what He wants for our communities, our marriages and families before that, our nations. But you don't see that harmony, do you? Why? Well, because there's all kinds of lawlessness and disorder in the world today. But that will soon change. Look at how it describes God's laws, His testimony. At one point it says, the commandment of the eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes. It just fills us with light. All of a sudden we can see, we can understand God's purpose and plan. We can know what's being worked out here below. We can know what God is doing. And what a mind-blowing experience that is. To have God, the great Creator God, fill our minds with His vision, with His understanding, with his love for law and order. If we submit to that, then it's going to bring harmony and togetherness and peace and glory and love. It's going to bring that into our lives. It's going to bring that into our marriages, our families. It's going to bring that into our churches. It'll bring that into our nations. Once Jesus Christ returns and establishes God's government on this earth, what God is saying in this beautiful psalm is that if we apply God's spiritual laws in our physical lives, it will bring order and harmony into our lives, just like what you see in God's material creation. He's the great sustainer, after all. And He wants to sustain you. Look at what it says in Ephesians 6. How that if you just keep one commandment, for example, honor your father and your mother, that you might live long on this earth. I mean, there's blessings that come with obedience to God's commandments. And that's not just something that's reserved for the book of Deuteronomy or Exodus in the Old Testament. As I said, it's Ephesians 6. You really will be blessed for obeying God's laws. It really will bring peace and harmony and unity and love into your family if you abide by these precious truths. In the Wonderful World of Tomorrow, that's another booklet that Herbert Armstrong wrote, in the world tomorrow, all people will be living together in harmony and peace. And that's because they're going to be living according to certain definite laws of God, and you can see how they're described right here in the middle of this psalm. The law of the eternal is perfect. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. I mentioned a few booklets there just a few minutes ago. The toll-free number, 1-866-930-3024. Don't forget to email us to td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show. And we'll see you tomorrow.